Finish the Inyan.
Yeah, sure. So we're discussing why the Aguna problem became, how we say, more from a problem to a crisis, both in terms of quantitatively, since there are many more divorces nowadays than there were in years gone by, as well as qualitatively, because we no longer have the kind of organized communities from which one cannot escape. Now, a person can just decide to go from shtiebel to shtiebel to shtiebel in certain more devout communities, or just decide to just become unaffiliated, not belong to any organized group, so there's no official group pressure that can be brought upon him, as used to be the case in the European communities, which are organized communities, very often government-sponsored communities, where you had to belong. Okay. And so I tell you at the end of this year about my trip to Eretz Yisrael under the... unfortunately, we're now seeing again rockets in Eretz Yisrael. I got out at that time just in time, just before the Scuds. And I didn't get you the substance about the agreement that finally emerged. Really, Rav Tzimbalist, as I mentioned to you last time, was the one who suggested this particular text. And Rav Zalman Nechemia agreed, and Rav Avad Yosef, whom I went to a year, it took me a whole year after I got them to agree. I was at the last part of last week's shiur, so I went home, and all the lawyers had to get, you ever deal with lawyers? Oh, they all have different opinions, and you have to get them all on board. It took me a whole mamash a year to tinker with it, and I had to keep checking back to Eretz Yisrael whether I wasn't doing anything against what the halachists said, but I had to have the lawyers. It took me mamash a full year later, January of the next year, I went back. And I got signatures from Zalman Nechemia, Rav Tzimbalist, and from Rav Avad Yosef, who signed on it. And I came back to America, and it was signed by Rabbi Libus, who was the head of the Igud HaRabbonim, and by Rabbi Gedaya Dov Schwartz from Chicago, the head of the Bezin of America. So I had five signatures originally. In the interim, we never looked around for more signatures officially. I spoke to a few people in the, we'll call it the Brooklyn community, without giving names. People who I knew and I trusted tremendously and I have great respect for, they both told me that yes, it's nothing wrong with it, but it's not going to happen in our world. It's not going to happen. Why? It's something new. We don't know anything new. So it's not new. It's 1,000 years old. Why 1,000 years old? If you look carefully in the small print in the Shulchan Aruch Eben HaEzer, you will see that there is a phrase in the classical Tanoim. You know, these days the Tanoim is a joke, it doesn't say anything. But the classical Tanoim, it says, in many circles, they're still reading this list. They know what they're saying, they know what they're doing, but it's still there. U'machmas idur uktat yomad ketakonas shum. Six words. In case it's idur, what does the word idur mean, gentlemen? What's idur mean? What's ne'edar in today's Hebrew, modern Hebrew? Ne'edar, what's what it mean? Not ne'edar, but an ayin. Missing. The ne'adarim nebuch. The ne'adarim in Eretz Yisrael means the missing. It's a euphemism for dead. U'machmas idur, if you're absent for a long time, presumed dead. Uktat, we'll come to that. Yomad ketakana shum. They will follow the takana. What does what shum means? Spire of Amaizah Magensa. I was once at a wedding where they had a very major Talmud Chacham, Rosh Hashiva, was asked to read the Tanoim. And he got to that word, he just stopped. Didn't know what it was. Stopping. What can he show? Alumeshiv, Shuv Matsasi. What could it be? None of those things made sense to him. But he just read Shum and gone on. That's what we call it, Shum. Anyway, what's the story with Idur? So it says in the Tosfos in Masechta Ksubos, our yeshiva is supposed to be learning Ksubos this year. So in the fourth parak is the following situation. A man has his whole life savings, and he gives it away as a dowry so his daughter can get married. Okay, so it wasn't in the old days. Dowry. What happens? Nebuch, his daughter dies. Who gets the money? The son-in-law, who's about to remarry, have a family of his own. This poor guy, not only did he lose his daughter, he lost his fortune. Nebuch. It took a double hit. So Rabbeinu Tam said, based on Maamar Chazal, that's, some say it's, we think it's called Rabbeinu Tam because of Yaakov Ish Tam Yosho, then it's Rabbeinu Yaakov. Some say it's because of this. V'tam larik kochachem. a pasuk in the Tochacha. So Chazal say it refers to someone who gave all his money away for his daughter's nadan, and the daughter died. He lost his daughter, he lost his wealth, he lost everything. So Rabbi Natam came to correct that, and he said, I made a takana. In the case the daughter passes away within the first year of the marriage, all the money, with no issue, all the money goes back to the father. Later they made a takana, within the second year of marriage, half goes back to the father. This way, the Natam Larik Kochachem is ameliorated. And that's another reason why it's called Rabbi Natam. Good. That became to be known as Rabbeinu as Takana Shum. Because you know, Rabbeinu Tam was before that. Those three cities flourished shortly after his time. We're talking now in the 12th century. So it's not quite 1,000 years old, but it's you know, we're pushing 900, you know, so it's over 800 years old. And therefore it's old. It's not new. What's Ktat? This ketat means if they have a fight, the man will give his wife money on a monthly basis, a weekly basis, to support her while they're not being able to be dragged into the bezdin. That's what it says. The sefer called the Nachlas Shiva Simen Tes, where it gives all the various shtaros. That's what it explains. But the guy won't come to bezdin, and Shmuel should starve him to death. So the bezdin, he obligates himself, and Bezek can obviously confiscate it, can garnish the property or wages of the husband to support the wife to the tune of, I think it was 10 zehuvim every week, a month, whatever it was, a certain amount of money, which was taken out of his bank, if you will, even against his will, because he agreed to it before they got married. Now, my view is that they weren't so much afraid she's going to starve to death. They're much more afraid she's going to languish as a naguna forever. The only way they could get the man to release her is hitting him in the pocketbook. We're going to charge you 10 zuvim per week or month in order that you keep giving the money till the get is given. A few years ago, when we sort of redid the Hebrew version of the prenup and gave it back to the other rabbanim just to look at it, so he's given to Rabbi Usher Weiss, Shalita, a very big Talmud Chacham in Yerushalayim. He wrote a beautiful letter, very warm letter, encouraging the use of this prenup. He just had a little bit of an argument with me. He said he thinks that they really meant that she shouldn't starve to death. They didn't mean that he shouldn't hold her an aguna. It doesn't really matter. It's more of a sociological issue, if you ask me. I still think I'm right. He thinks he's right. We're friends. So either way, he approves it. He endorses it. He encourages it, which is very good. Got a new endorsement. You know, back in the early 90s, Rav Usher Weiss was an unknown name. Now he's a Olah L'Gedula, so it's good to have his name on board as well. Now, there are those who have certain problems with the prenup, over and above those who say, as my Brooklyn friends told me, it's nothing wrong with it, it's just not going to happen in our community, because it's new, and I told them it's really, really old. Anyway, but there are those who have certain technical objections to it, and it's only fair to record those objections. There's an issue called asmachta. Asmachta means either a contingency obligation or an exaggerated obligation to machlokos, the Rambam, and Tosfos. The Rambam says any contingency obligation is invalid, and here you have a big problem. Here's a clear contingency obligation. However, if you look at the Rambam, it appears it's only invalid if no mechanism of kinyan is utilized. Rambam has a unique view that if you have an unconditional obligation, it can take effect with words alone. I hereby owe you $100. I owe you the money. The rest of the world disagrees, so they have a different approach. Rambam says, I say, if the Yankees win tomorrow, I owe you $100. That's null and void. But if I did a kinyan, whatever the kinyan may happen to be, chalip and shtar, you know, the various means of either acquisition or indemnification, then it works, notwithstanding the fact that there's a contingency. So therefore, since here we have a kinyan, it's written in the document that the person accepts upon himself all this with we call a kinyan. Even if he never did it, doesn't matter. You have a rule, you know, this hodas baldin kameidim damim. He agreed that he admitted that he did it, so if he did it, and therefore, it should work according to the Rambam, in my view. coming, but we're not quite done yet. Tosfos says it's an exaggerated obligation. In this particular case, we don't consider it to be an exaggeration. We put in a sum. Originally, there was a Rav Zalman Nechem who wrote $50 a day. He thinks $50 a day, that's enough to support any woman for a day, catch this, in a hotel. So she gets, you know, food and place to sleep. $50 today in a hotel? Maybe have to add a zero in plenty of some hotels. But anyway, so we moved it up originally from the very beginning to 100. That goes back to the early 90s. And some 10 years later, or maybe a little bit more, we upped it to 150. Now they told me they want to up it even more. Now 150, it's already over $50,000 a year. I thought you could live on that. Rabbi, not in the five towns. Whatever, I don't want to get involved in the neighborhood issues. But the truth is originally, we left the number blank to negotiate what they think it costs to live. That was a bad idea. There's fighting and arguing. We just put in an average number, and that's all. You want to tinker with it on your own, do it. But we put it in the default position. Also, we originally put in, pick any bezin you want. Also, bad idea. You put in the bezin of America as the default position. You want to go to somewhere else, go ahead. But the document itself leaves no blanks as far as the amount, nor as far as the bezin. No blanks. You want to tinker with it, you take your word processor, whatever they're called today, and play with it. It's your business. Okay, but this is so I thought according to the Rambam and according to Tosfos, it should certainly be good. There is a position of Rav Yashiv, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, that differs. He says that it's true that according to the Rambam, if there is a method of acquisition, then we do not have to worry about asmachta, even if it's conditional. However, Rav Yashiv understands the Rambam to be limited to a case of an acquisition of property. But in terms of indemnification, what we call it is chayvus, not a haknah, then according to Rav Yashiv's pshat in the Rambam, and I happen to think it's completely correct, not that I'm a person to say yes or no, but I think it's completely correct, according to the Rambam, you would still run into an asmachta problem. And therefore, I believe he's correct. There's a serious problem of asmachta according to the opinion of the Rambam. However, having said that, we don't always follow the Rambam. Even Anshei Edut HaMizrach, with all due respect to the Rambam, they follow Maran Bet Yosef. They follow the Mechaber, Shulchan Aruch. And in the Shulchan Aruch, you look in Choshen Mishpat, Simon Kuf Lam and Aleph, and Maran Bet Yosef, based upon the tour's understanding of Rambam, which may have been, in fact, a misunderstanding, not going into that right now, but it doesn't matter. That's how the tour understood the Rambam, or that's how Rabbi Yosef Karo understood it. The Torah, the whole story, and therefore it seems to be passed in the halacha, even for Anshei HaMizrach, Edot HaMizrach, that it is valid and there's no asmachta issue. Ashkenazim for sure seem to accept that position. As long as there is what we call a kinyan, what they call bebezdin chashuv, that's not the Gemara Masechta in the Dorim, a kinyan bebezdin chashuv works even if it would be an exaggerated sum. How much more so if it's not an exaggerated sum? So I thought there's no problem from strict halacha. It works according to Ashkenazim for sure. According to Maran Bet Yosef for sure. I concede according to the Rambam it might not be good, but so we don't follow the Rambam. It's interesting, when Rav Yashiv was approached about this, the official response that he didn't like it for was another one. The guy is not going to know what he's signing. To which I said, so what? So what? You signed a piece of paper, you had an opportunity to study it, you didn't, it's tough luck. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. I signed something, I didn't know what it said. Too bad, you signed it. You shouldn't have signed it otherwise. So I'm not sure where Rabbi Yashiv was exactly driving at. That's what he says. To which Rabbi Gartner, who printed the original article way back in 1988, said, what do you mean? And especially in America, they look at it, they can bring a lawyer, and they can analyze it, da-da-da-da. I once had a case. I was sitting here in Kent Morasha, and there was a prenup to be signed, someone from my shul. Out of the four parents, three of them are lawyers. Oh, wow, is it fun? Tinkering here, tinkering there. Baruch Hashem, the family's happily married. Wonderful family, but lawyers are lawyers, they want to get them involved. But if you want, you can. As a matter of fact, there is a letter, there's a point in the prenup that says, we've been given an opportunity to consult with a rabbinic advisor and a legal advisor. Don't have to do it, but it's written in there that you can't say, I didn't know about it, I didn't know to ask a lawyer. So we were given opportunity. That's why it shouldn't be done in the last second, so the opportunity should be real. Even if it's not at the wedding, I did a couple at the wedding just in the month of June, because it wasn't my fault, it was other people's fault, whatever it is. But there were lawyers at the wedding. Could have asked the lawyer on the spot. No Jewish way has no lawyers. It's not possible. So, okay. In theory, the opportunity was there. In any event, so Rabbi Yashiv was never criticized a prenup publicly on the grounds that it was an asmachta. And this, some people were rubbing their eyebrows. Rabbi Yashiv knows how to take a stand. He was very famous at taking stands. He never took a stand against his prenup based upon asmachta. I think I know the answer. Many years ago, my Talmidim asked me a question. I didn't know the answer for years. Every ksuba is an asmachta. A ksuba means if the person will predecease his wife or he will divorce her, then he'll give her X dollars. So the ksuba itself is mandatory. You don't even need a piece of paper, technically speaking, just to keep her security. But the extra, we call Tosefes ksuba, I mentioned last time, Rav Tzimbalist, the argument, billion shkolim, it's asmachta. He didn't expect to divorce her. The question, the boys asked me this question, I didn't know what to answer for years. I discovered the answer of Yashiv. For those who are fans of Isfarim, the two Rav Yashivs, the one about that he's worried about Asmachta for his chayvas according to the Rambam on the one hand, and the one I'm mentioning now on the other hand, are both the same Simen number, Chelek Aleph and Beis. I think it's Kuf Samach Gimel. Yad Bar Ilan, you probably see it. He says, yes, it's Kasha. You know what he answers? Amazing answer. It's not his, like, quotes from the Erech Shai, I believe he quotes it. You may have learned either in Ksubas or in Kiddush, the famous Gemara. Two mechotonim, they want their kids to get married, but you know, who's going to pay for this? So the Gemara's expression, Kamach tenos in the bincha. When you kick into the kitty for your son. And he says, Kamach tenos in the bincha. And everybody kicks for your daughter. Omdu, they made an agreement. Omdu, v'kitshu, they got married. Hein, advarim, anitna b'amira. No need for chalipa, no need for shtar, no need for nothing, zero. It's automatic. So Zerah Shai, a ksuba by definition, is a preemptive agreement. Kamat anosen, lebitcha, in effect. As such, it's not, there's no need for a kinyan. There's no need for a kinyan. It is not going to be imperiled by any kind of asmachta problem. Asmachta undermines a kinyan. You don't need a kinyan. Ad kan Erech Shai, Rav Yashiv quotes it and he likes it. That explains why, in my opinion, he has no real problem with asmachta with the prenup, because when he wrote himself in the same number, by coincidence, for the volume either earlier or later, comes out it should be okay. That's my shot. Okay, anyway. So the prenup is certainly a solution to the aguna problem. It's not a foolproof solution for a variety of reasons. Obviously, some don't sign it. That's the biggest tragedy. I've been asked every year to go to a particular school in that same community. I don't want to single it out, but what can I tell you? To speak to the graduating seniors about, you know, they're only 17, 18-year-old girls. You're going to get married one day. Make sure you have a prenup. So, I've been doing it for many, many years. So, I got a call from a young lady that she's having a problem. Her marriage looks like it's dissolving. I said, you have a prenup? No. Said, weren't you in the room when I spoke? Yes. Why don't you sign it? They told me I didn't need it. Famous last words. Because she didn't have a prenup, there was so much, literally, blood, sweat, and tears shed unnecessarily. Greatest Rabbonim were dragged into bad situation. Rav Shechter Shalit, that hurts me the most. This Goyen and Tzaddik was dragged into a royally messy situation. He didn't really want to do it, and it was terrible. That mom was terrible. And all because of the lack of a prenup. So I find it very wrong not to sign it. You don't want to use it, you won't need it. Good, I hope you won't need it. You should sit in the drawer until Mashiach comes. Yes.
So the prenup just imposes monetary sanctions, but
not a sanction, I'll use the word sanction. Support obligation.
And that's the purpose of that.
Well, if there's a support obligation and the man wants to pay the money till he's dead, then it's fine. Then he doesn't have to give her a get. That's one of the cases where it won't work. He's a multi-billionaire. He has 150 bucks a day, gladly, 50,000 a year, gladly. I'll keep you in Aguna for the next, 20 years, cost me $1 million? With pleasure. To cause you pain, It's worth $1 million to me to hold you in chains for 20 years. Easy. After 20 years, I consider it. After I go to my first million. That's one case. That has never happened in our history. The more common case is a pauper. Yes, it's true. I owe you $150 a day. So pay up. I have no money. But I'm judgment proof. Take it to the judge. Go into a secular court. Yes, Your Honor, I owe the money. I have no question about it. So pay. I have no money. Do you have a house? No. Do you have a bank account? No. I'm going to go down the list of no's. He has no money. He has no money. So we call it judgment proof. So even though he agreed to pay the money, and he agrees he's obligated, but they just can't get it out of him. That's a problem. That's a problem. So this is not a complete solution to every single situation, even if it is signed. Then there were those who tried it. I had a case, unbelievable case. It was signed, all right. Very sad case. The details are too complex to go into right now. But the lawyer for the man said it was a forgery. They forged the signature. They forged the chosen signature. They forged all the other things. Everything's forged. Had to go take a year or two to go to court till he finally had to admit it was not forged. And according to what I was told by the other side, they went after the lawyer to sue him for frivolous delay of game. You know, that's a penalty in some sports, delay of game. But here it was caused that the delay of game itself caused mental anguish and physical and financial. And it said, according to what I was told, that the lawyer may have to pay the money. We'll see. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. But anyway, these things can happen. It says it's a forgery, despite the fact that it was witnessed by two rabbis. They were lawyers. But anyway, there's even a notarization process which is in place. And one of our good lawyer friends from the area arranged that in New York State, the officiating rabbi, such as myself, is able to be the notary, even if the... Just 1 second. Hello? Hello, how's the Rabbanit? Where are you, Rabbanit? Okay. Good. So we'll see you later. Okay. Please let me know. Okay. Litraot. Thank you. Be well. Bye-bye. I normally don't think it's called middle of the shiur. This is one of the most important rabbaniyot that we have around here. So, okay, talk about it later. Okay, let's go. So these are some of the. It doesn't solve all the world's problems. I'm the first to admit it. These days, people want to have what they call a systemic solution. Fix the system. You can't fix the system. The system is a divine system, and there are certain limitations that we can't go beyond. Well, let's arrange a situation where a woman can have a divorce on demand. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You can't do it. And therefore, all the other solutions that I know about are flawed in one way or another. And that's why I think this is the best solution with its limitations, given the present circumstances. I don't see a better way. And I think it's a very important step. Now, it doesn't mean it's the only thing. There are other ways to fight against the Aguna problem, but they all have issues. It's, again, there are different kinds of prenups out there, which, to my mind, may run into us to a real asmafta problem, which you spoke about earlier, or may even be worse. One of them says that if the person doesn't pay the money, he's liable for what they call liquidated damages, which means you can concretize a loose obligation for mental anguish into a certain set amount of money, and under penalty of contempt. Any lawyers here? Pre-law? Contempt of court. Have you heard of it? What happens if you push the envelope to the end? What happens? Contempt of court. What happens to you at the end? Where do you go? Jail. That's the right word. Jail. If you threaten someone in jail, the get is invalid, likely. So it's a very serious problem. That's not a good text, in my opinion. There are all kinds of other, what I call, grossly inflated daily obligations, even if it's couched in support. In my view, it's hard to view it that way. I think it's really a penalty clause. If the man accepts upon himself a penalty clause, and it's self-accepted, and he gives the get under the pain of that penalty clause, the Ramah says the get is good b'di'evit. B'di'evit. Chatchila shouldn't be done that way, so it's not a good solution ideally. The Mishkanus Yaakov says it's no good even b'di'evit. Others say differently, not to go the way. But there is another solution called the New York State get law. Who here is from New York State? Raise your hand. Okay, it's a significant percentage. And even people who live in far away New Jersey, but it could be that they're governed by the New York State get law if they live there as a young couple and they get to, it's a whole complicated story. What was this law? There are two laws. The initial law was 1983. We're talking about over 30 years ago. There it said that if one party sues for divorce, the court will not grant that request unless that party removes all barriers to his spouse's remarriage. So if a husband sues for divorce and the wife says, I'm an aguna, the court will simply not grant the divorce decree. Finish. Shalom. He's stuck. Civilly married until he turns gray. There's only one problem with that. People got very smart and the husbands stopped suing for divorce. Stopped. So if the wife sues for divorce, this law doesn't affect him at all. So it proved to be a very ineffective law. Very ineffective. This led to the famous 1992 get law. Maybe she used the word infamous. That law was passed literally in the middle of the summer when no one was looking. It was one of those sweetheart deals with a particular legislator from New York State, with a particular family that was active in journalism. I'm not going to give you any more details. You can figure it out. Just look in the 1992 history books. Or go on your internet. I'm sure you can find it. And there it said that a judge, as we know in New York State, it's an equitable distribution state, which means when the couple break up, the judge, based on a number of factors, decides how to divide their property equitably. It could be 50-50. It could be different percentages based on who was doing the work and who was supporting whom, and many other factors. They threw in another phrase into that whole long law, which is that the judge shall take into consideration the failure of a party to remove a barrier to remarriage when calculating equitable distribution and calculating what they call support, alimony, chule. This means it's a disaster for the Jewish man. He walks into court, won't give his wife a get, she'll slap this law on him, and it's going to cost him dearly. Cost him, who knows, millions of dollars in wealthy families. That sounds to me like a get me'usa. Because you're taking away his money. There were those who claim, but it's self-imposed. Why is it self-imposed? He got married in New York. Well, that may be true, those who got married in New York post-1992. Not those who got married before. And then this law came and snapped, was imposed upon them. It was not self-imposed at all. But even if you got married in 1992, I don't know, you really accepted this. Some say, except the law of the land, you have no choice, it's binding. Some say, it's a weak defense. And in any event, even if it is self-imposed, the Ramah says, you shouldn't do it l'chatchila. So it's not, the law should not stand. As Rav Shlomo Zalman said, it's not a takana, it's a sakana. Got that now? It doesn't help, it's endangers because it lead to invalid getting being dispensed. One of the rabbis, Rabbi Bleich Shalita, says that he thinks that every get given since 1992 in New York State is presumptively no good. That's a pretty bold statement because he's afraid that these are the facts. I think that's way, way overboard. There may be cases, though, where it's true. Our Bezdin of America, will not do a get unless they first analyze carefully to make sure that there is no compulsion based upon the 92 New York State get law. Truth be told, most other Bezdin didn't just turn a blind eye. Just do it no matter what. And there could be some cases which are problematic. Maybe even where the get is under a cloud. So this is an unfortunate reality. The truth is, the only way that I know out of the get law is the prenup. Because in the prenup, and I didn't mention this before, there are certain options not the Beis Din, that's the fault. Not the amount, that's the fault. But what is the jurisdiction of the Beis Din? The minimum jurisdiction is to deal with the prenup itself, and a ksuba, and a tnoim. That's the minimum. But I strongly recommend, both because I believe in the Beis Din system as being better than any other system, as well as because of this particular problem of the get law, that the Beis Din should be given full rights to make monetary decisions that affect the parties. We got a little pushback. Whoa, I go to the Beis Din's going to favor the husband, I can do better in secular court, brah, 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 brah. So what? Should you want to follow the halacha? No, I'm modern Orthodox, I want to follow the secular law. So, we understand this. We understand it. We don't necessarily approve. We understand it. We think it's kosher if they both agree. I think it's kosher. So we put in the financial authorization part of the document as plain. I authorize the Beis Din to deal with it, plain halacha. Or I authorize Beis Din to deal with it based upon equitable distribution, not the law of New York State in particular, which may be a little bit of a problem, but based upon what they call the UCC, kind of a generalistic kind of a playbook, if you will, where it's not the law of any particular state. So I don't think it's a problem what they call our calls. Or, if you're really avant-garde, community property. That's California. Anyone here from California? That's 50-50. Don't bother me. I don't care who said, I don't care what, where, who. 50-50. The Georgians don't want to be bothered. You can do that too. As a matter of fact, our Tanoim, which say nothing, they have one sentence which may say everything. Yishtetum benechsein shove v'shove. You may recognize it. Some say it means community property, 50-50. Most people say it's just a platitude, it means nothing. But anyway, I'm just giving you an example. So that, good. We also have an additional clause, which I think should be signed as well, that the Beis Din is authorized to deal with issues of child support, custody, and visitation. Now, I have to be honest, this last clause is subject to being overturned by a secular court. The prenup itself really cannot be overturned unless it's irrational. Did I tell my story about the Baltimore, Maryland court? I didn't tell you that one yet. I'll come to it. Amazing story. But if it's not irrational, then they can't overturn it. When it comes to child custody, visitation, and support, that is officially the bailiwick of the state, and it's not transferable. They can take any case we had and overturn it. It's yet to happen. And since our Beis Din was sort of reconstituted way back 16 years ago, never happened. Not ever once. I sat in the first such case. I sat with a rabbi who had smicha, and the third party in the Beis Din was none other than what I call the Gadol HaDor in psychology. Who's that? Dr. Pelkum in Savannah. The Gadol HaDor. He sat on the case. Now, his credentials can fill up this whole table. Which Shmendrick in a secular court is going to say, I am a better psychologist than Dr. David Pelkin? He can do it, that'd be crazy. So therefore, whatever he said goes, and we're going to start overturning him. So we put a psychologist on the, we don't use, that's what we did from other Beis Din. Other Beis Din, they consult with a psychologist. We put the psychologist on the Beis Din itself. He doesn't have smicha, so what? So what? It's far that smicha, it's good enough. So, that's it. We sat on the case. We have yet, to my knowledge, yet to be overturned. There are two issues with our prenup. One, unfortunately, a judge in New Jersey, I think, made a big mistake. But, you know, it's hard for me to overturn it. The judge said that it was signed under duress. What was the duress? The Kala said she won't marry him unless he signs it. I don't understand. I'll buy a house for you. What, $1 million. Okay, I signed $1 million, and I kept it under duress. It's really only worth $500,000. So why'd you sign it? Well, you wouldn't sell me the house otherwise. That's duress. I don't understand what the judge was thinking. What is duress? She won't marry me. Yeah. You want to marry? Sign. I think the judge is nuts. They told me he's a Jew who doesn't really like, but I don't want to get involved with who he is. It doesn't matter. So that's a bummer, yeah.
If it's a smart though, so the idea is not based in or in the secular court.
No.
If it's a smart though,
No. Here's the answer. He's obligating himself according to Jewish law, and if the Jewish law is mistaken, he's really not obligated, then the get is given under the cloud of having to pay money to which she's not entitled.
Why is it contract?
It's a
Jewish law.
It's
a contract, so pay the money.
Yeah, but Beznel say this contract may be enforceable in secular court, but not in Jewish court. If you go to secular court, you're a ganef. You're stealing. That's what they say. It's an arguable position. I'm not saying it's correct. It's an arguable position. Oh, let's do the following story. Listen to this one. We close the loophole, but here's the problem. A woman can go through a divorce process with her husband. It could take a long time. And after it's all over, she'll slap him with a bill, $100,000. Back support. To close that loophole, we added a phrase in the prenup, which says, woman waives her rights to this obligation until she notifies her husband of a desire to collect it with a notarized, registered letter, whatever, blah, 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 blah. What happened in our case? It was a case in Maryland somewhere. They signed a prenup, $100 a day at the time. And what happened was at the time that they wended away through courts. He said he came after she asked him to come to the Beis Din. Just give me 1 second, I'm sorry. Hello? Can I call you back, Rabbi Chalap? Okay. Bye-bye. My boss. I consider him still my boss, you know, even though maybe some other people, a couple of people since then, but he's... Anyway. After 3 months, he came to the Beis Din. It took that long till he came. And he said, I'll give him the get right now. No problem. She said, well, you know, we have to settle things in first. Da-da-da-da-da. Took him 3 years. So after 3 years, she gets the get, he gets it settled in the court, send him a bill for $100,000. For those 3 years, that's already over. He said, what, are you crazy? Are you crazy? This is, I came to our Beis Din, of course, and the Beis Din was split 2-1. Two of the judges said, look, you know, technically speaking, just look it on his face, she is right, at least up until the point that he came to Beis Din, I'm willing to forget. So they awarded her $10,000. Right, for the 3 months. The other judge said, what, are you kidding? He was a good guy. Even those 3 months, he wasn't hiding from the Beis Din. He said right away, I'm coming. Just give me a date. Until they got him and they got her and the three judges. You should get zero. Okay, but the majority rules. Both parties appealed the decision. And our Beis Din, we have an appeals process. The Av Beis Din, that's Rabbi Schwartz from Chicago, is officially in charge of, he or his designee. But guess what? I was the designee. Both parties appealed. One party said, I want $100,000. It's ridiculous. The other party said, zero. So I took the appeal very seriously, worked on it hard, consulted with Sivu Rabbanim, etc. Came out with a psak, zero. Okay. The lady took both pieces of paper. She was foolish. She could have gotten 10 grand, now she got zero. Took it to the judge in Maryland and said, it's an irrational decision. If you're not going to give me 100, at least give me 10. The judge in Maryland wrote a beautiful, beautiful decision. Said, this is a great decision that this rabbi. That's a great decision. It makes perfect sense. It fits in with secular law and it makes sense based on religion. So Baruch Hashem, the prenup was confirmed as I understood it. More recently, the prenup was in Connecticut, was challenged on constitutional grounds, separation of church and state. The judge says nothing, it's not a problem, it's a neutral document, there's no religion in here, it's just dollars and cents. So we're doing okay, save for the fact that one judge in New Jersey said it was done under compulsion, which I still can't get it through my head. She didn't hold a gun to his head. She said, "You want to marry me? Sign it. You want to buy my house? Give me $1 million." I still don't get it. But now there is a whole series of new laws springing throughout the country because of financial prenups. And more than that, because of the, you know, we Jews are a small percentage, certainly Orthodox Jews. There are a lot of Muslims these days. And they want to make their agreements go with the Sharia. And the American public policy is very much resistant to that. There are all kinds of new laws countering all the prenups because of this Muslim phenomenon that we're caught in the crossfire. So I just spoke recently we had a special consult with a very high-powered law firm, did what we call pro bono for us for nothing, to find ways how to overcome this potential problem. Very complex, very with disclosures of net worth and with all kinds of funny things that had nothing to do with us, but we are incorporating, as we speak, they were rewriting it to try to overcome any potential legal hurdles which will be there. But the most important thing that we said is it should be done as far as in advance as possible. When I meet a couple, when I marry them, I meet them, across the colony, they don't meet me. Right away, I pull out the piece of paper, sign it right now. You want to ask a lawyer? Go ahead. It's going to be a rabbi, you can ask me or someone else. Usually they sign it. The father could be a lawyer. You only need a lawyer for this. It'll sit in the drawer. We hope it'll never be used. If it chas v'shalom has to be used, and it's a good thing it's there. I tell people that you shouldn't think that signing it is you're protecting the spouse. You're protecting yourself from your own worst instincts. Right now, you love each other. You want to help each other, so you can go talk to a good bezdin. You're willing to have certain things apply to you, etc. Once you get into a fight, oy vey, people, the worst thing comes out. They want only the secular court, or they want a corrupt bezdin. All kinds of these Zabla cases. Don't ask. There's horror stories, one after the other. So therefore, I believe that this is a particularly powerful approach. Again, it doesn't solve all the world's problems. The Aguda issue is, of course, symptomatic of a broader issue, which is Jewish marriages are suffering, Orthodox ones included. What's the main reason? If you ask, what's the main reason? I think I told you that in 1958, it was one out of 400 people was divorced in the whisper tones. You know what the main reason is, if you ask me? Who wants to guess what I think? What's changed the most between 1958 and 2014? Technology. What did you say? Technology. Technology, no.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification. Yeah, it's always got a little strong, I agree. Technology, you know, the internet, but something different.
Everyone wants for themselves.
That's true, it wants for themselves. What did you say?
They're not willing to give to others.
That's true, too. That's terrible. That's why I tell every couple when I meet with them, it's going from Rabbi Dessler and Michter Ben Yoh, Kunjus HaChesed. If you're going to want to take, you'll never be happy. If you want to give, you'll always be happy. That's also true. And that's changed somewhat. You're right. But there's something even more than that.
Morality
stinks. And the people who are sinning, unfaithful spouses, Hashem Yerachem, much more than they used to be. All this is true. But I have a different theory. Very simple. Money. Money is the root of all evil. How do I know this? There was a rabbi in Young Israel of Windsor Park, Bayside, Queens. Rabbi Louis Bernstein, a famous rabbi, very fine man. He passed away fairly young, quite a number of years ago. He told me once in a conversation, there was never a divorce in his shul. I looked at him and was incredulous. How's that possible? He said, he looked at me, there was no money. There was no money. And not just the fact that there's no money, they couldn't afford to get divorced. Much more than that. Money lead to a fast and loose lifestyle, entitlement, as I said before, sometimes immorality. But there was, you know, I grew up in Queens on a simple block in Kew Garden Hills when I moved in 1958. I was the only one of the firm couple on the block. That's it. But there were, forgive the expression today, it's a dirty word now, family values. Every family had a father and a mother, and you know, they had a couple of kids. There were Jews, from Jews, non-from Jews, goyim, but the idea of a family was a value, and that's how people lived. Today, with the fast track, I want more than a wife. I want whatever. I don't want to spell out what hurts me to spell out. and it's unfortunately infiltrated into the Jewish community, and particularly the moneyed Jewish community, which now occupies a much larger percentage of Orthodox Jews than it did in the 50s. There were very few Gvirim in the 50s. You count them. Now, Jews have made it. Whether in business and law and medicine and whatever, they made it. Just, everyone's a millionaire nowadays. It's no. And that causes the problem. That's what I think. That's maybe pure by Bernstein. There was no money. There was no divorce. Acre they couldn't afford, as you said correctly. But I think it's even more than that. They lived simple lifestyles. A man had a wife, and a wife had a husband, and they didn't glitz, they didn't mix. I don't have to tell you what goes on in the fast set. You know, my grandfather, Oliver Shalom, gave a bracha to his progeny that nobody should be too rich. People have wanted to know how long that bracha lasts for. They want to know if they can somehow try to overcome it somehow or other. I said, no, that bracha lasts for a long time. There was one member of the family who struck it rich, and there was a divorce, Shem Yirach. So the Zayin knew what he was talking about. You know, he didn't say he can be rich. He didn't say that. Not too rich. I guess how you define that depends on some subjectivity. So, you know, these are issues, major issues. I mean, Aguna issues are obviously based upon marriage issues. I was just reading in Mishpacha that there's a whole tumult about what they call it, midlife divorces. There's a couple, they were together for 25 years, married off a couple of the kids, and then they just split up. Nothing holding them together anymore. They just split apart. And they're furious, coming, how could you do this? This is so immoral. Someone started defending it. What do you mean? The lady had to put up with this garbage, with this Gehenim for so many years just so her kids should get married, and now that she doesn't want to put up with it anymore. What do you mean? There's two sides to every issue. Some marriages are so bad, as bad as divorce is, it's terrible, but it's worse if they stay together. The kids grow up in the middle of World War III. So we have to daven for good marriages. This is the most single most important decision you make in your entire life, is who you're going to marry. But who you're going to marry depends in large measure on who wants to marry you. And who wants to marry you depends on who you are. He said, I'll be a bum for 22 years, and now I'm going out, I'll put on a tie, and I'll buy a nice car, and then she'll want to marry me. What kind of business? You can't fool most. There are naive people who are being fooled all the time. I had a call about that exactly yesterday, about some such naive woman. But as a rule, people can see through you. So you have to work on yourself from the earliest childhood. Hopefully your parents gave you a good chinuch, midas tovas, gave you good values. Hopefully your parents were a good role model about what a good marriage is. You saw that they gave in to one another and didn't fight with one another. That's what's critical. Unfortunately, if a man grows up in a house where the father mistreats the mother, the chances of his doing the same thing are too high. Minigabasainabiodenu. And says Biodenu is Biodenu. Yeah, I'm one of the rabbis on the Shalom Task Force. So people get literally beat up. Too many of them. And too often the rabbi defends the man because he has another woman. He was in yeshiva for 5 years. How can it be? It is, I'm telling you, it is. And when the mikvah lady calls and a woman comes to the mikvah bruised and she starts asking questions and cover up, you notice the problem. So, I will conclude this segment of the series, which is the Aguna problem. And there were two other problems that you want me to speak about. I guess we have still a few more. So one was, I think, the Geirus problem, correct? Yeah. We'll do that next week? Shemitah. And the Shemitah problem. Okay. Camp. What else?
And Camp Halachas.
Camp Halachas problem? Yeah. Okay. We'll do that too. And what else do you want? Any other problems that you want to talk about? Maybe next week, Geirus? So that's a good thing? Please, that is to remind me. Next week, we'll talk about Geirus problem, but see out of the Shemitah. Thank you for coming and thank you for listening.